Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's Durafighter interior paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's Durafighter paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the episode where we are going to talk about how to balance, find balance between your assets and liabilities. And the whole focus of this show, if you're new to this show, thank you so much for downloading and subscribing. We publish three times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And this show is all about creating passive income, legacy wealth through buy and hold real estate. We don't talk about other strategies in real estate. If you want other strategies, look elsewhere. We buy real estate and hold it for the rest of our lives. That's our goal. And we consider buying real estate assets, right? Those are assets that sit in the assets column. And a few years ago, when we started buying real estate, maybe 7 years ago, we started noticing Natalie would come to me with these spreadsheets and she'd say, look, you've increased our net worth by $120,000.
And she I would use inclusive language.
Well, I mean, but by buying these two properties, well,
okay.
Remember?
All right.
Yeah. And by the way, you just corrected me.
I would like to point out, I'm trying to find this tweet by, let's see. Aaron Nyheiser says, great podcast today. Clayton, you do correct Natalie quite often. Hashtag being honest. So for those of you who caught the last episode that I was on and I accused him of correcting me all the time, I've threatened to quit.
Right.
Because, you know, you can't work with people like this.
Well, you're going to quit. Where are you going to go? Upstairs?
Right. I quit.
Yeah.
I just can't quit you.
Right. I'm going to go upstairs to my office and quit this podcast.
I quit this podcast, but really it'd only be hurting myself.
Right. So anyway, we decided last week, if you haven't listened to last week's episode where we talked about how to explain what we talked about last week, and this is really the impetus for this week's episode.
Okay. So we were trying to figure out what to do with our home equity line of credit. And in that equation, we are trying to figure out what we own versus what we owe, so we make sure that we're leveraged appropriately. And so we got a viewer who wrote us about the idea of leveraging, and that sort of sparked another discussion based on some advice my father, who is a successful entrepreneur and investor, had given us about making sure we're leveraged appropriately. So first of all, let's talk about the concept of leverage, and then we'll talk about the appropriate amount that we think we should be leveraged. So how would you explain leverage?
Well, leverage is really that. It's any asset that you can leverage with a bank's money, private money. You're taking something you own, and you're leveraging it, right? So think of it like a full, you know, what is like a teeter-totter. Right. And how much you can get out of it by raising it up or lowering it down, like a balance beam in a way. And so if you've got, for instance, a primary residence, right, and let's say it's worth $300,000 and you owe nothing on it, right, you've paid it off. So you have $300,000 sitting there in equity. Well, you could leverage that property with a local bank and get a home equity line of credit. And they're probably going to give you 80 to 85% of the value of that property as a line of credit. So you may be able to walk away with, I don't know, what is that, like $275,000 or $250,000 roughly, depending on the bank. Now you've got this like line of credit that is leverage, right? You're leveraging one of your assets. So the argument that people had in 2008, 2007 is, and the reason that people got into trouble is they were over leveraged. They bought a lot of properties that declined in value. They bought A-class neighborhood properties, which was a huge problem. So they might buy in Stockton, California, or other more affluent communities. And A-class tenants and A-class neighborhoods, those are the people that lost their jobs and values plummet. Now they're over leveraged because the value of the property is not keeping up with the value of the rent. Their mortgage payment is more than they could collect on rent, and therefore they are over leveraged. And that's the great lesson from the Great Recession, is to not be over leveraged, right? But there's also another problem, to be under leveraged. And that's what my father-in-law was talking about, a successful entrepreneur. And Melissa, one of our listeners, had written us, I think last week, saying, I'd love to hear more about this formula and how your father-in-law structures things with his assets versus liabilities in his company.
Okay. But the idea of leverage is, again, just to maybe put it a tiny bit simpler, because I'd like to correct what
you just correct,
did.
Yeah, please correct me.
Which I asked you to define it, but really I should have just done it myself. So
you should define it and then I should explain it. You're good at defining things. I'm good at explaining it.
Okay. Well, what we're talking about here is taking what you own and using that as collateral to buy more stuff, because that's how wealthy people build large portfolios. Donald Trump couldn't have said, like, I want 5 towers and then just saved up enough money to do that, right? He had to prove to people that he owned enough that he could use as collateral in order to get a loan to buy the next thing. That's how you leverage. You take what do you own, how can I use that as collateral to buy the next thing, then you pay that thing down, and now you own 2 things. You use those 2 things as collateral to buy the next thing. It's like stacking, right?
It can also be that you don't own anything, right? And so what you're proving, as in the case of Donald Trump, what you're proving to someone else is your ability to build wealth, right? Your ability to build a portfolio. So in the case of private money, you might not own anything, right? And you're basically...
Well, you have to have something as collateral, right? You have a job with an income, that's collateral, right? So if you can't go to a lender and say, hey, I would like some money. I have no money. I have no job. I have no way of paying you this back, but I think I probably will, right?
Well,
a lender's looking at the strength of your portfolio and your sort of overall, they take a very holistic look at who you are. Do you have a job? What do you own? Do you have good credit? What's your history in buying things and paying those off? That's what they want to know, so that then you can leverage not only your assets, but sort of who you are to buy the next thing.
I guess what I'm saying is that the leverage can come from who you are, not necessarily from the things you own, as in the case of the book, The Instant Millionaire, which I've recommended here on the podcast. You know, he didn't have 2 nickels to rub together, but his ability to put together an compelling investment proved to the millionaire that he was worthy of lending him the money in order to kickstart his investing journey. And so therefore, leveraging can come in the form of intangibles, to your point, right? Your ability to pay this back. This is a great investment. Wow, all these tenants are going to literally pay this back threefold. So yes, John, that's a great investment. So to your point, yes, most of the time there's collateral, but there are some situations where you've got a rock star who has no money, who... You know, I feel like it's a Will Smith kind of a movie. Like, that's the kind of thing where, like, Will Smith would be in the movie. He's, like, living in a subway. And he's like, I'm going to prove to my family that I can do this. And he creates wealth from nothing, which
right.
can happen.
It's the idea that you'll buy something with little ownership because you see the picture of what you could have when you own that thing later.
Okay, so let's dive into this formula. And for your father and for my father-in-law, he owns a bunch of rental properties. He mm-hmm. owns a bunch of – he has like some warehouses as well, and he has properties that we've helped him acquire that – actually, those are his highest ROI properties, I think.
My dad's got a pretty wide-ranging portfolio. He's got single-family homes. He has a condo. He's got a multifamily in the Bay Area. I think it's 8 unit. And as well as some commercial properties that he inherited from my grandparents, which I've told that story a few times on the podcast. So he has quite a bit. And I'm trying to think if any of it has debt on it. I think that the multifamily in the Bay Area and the East Bay does have debt on it, but the rest of it is paid off.
Free and clear, right?
It's free and clear. Yeah.
But so also that the means assets.
Those are things that he can use as collateral to buy something else.
But he also runs a large landscaping company. And so his assets are also large diggers and large backhoes and all of those things, these big shredding machines that are that literally cost $1 million to acquire, and he can depreciate that asset. So an asset is obviously something that you can depreciate over time. A liability would be a car that you buy that you cannot, you know, depreciate over time, right? What's another example of a, of a liability?
Of a liability is just anything that you own, debt on any kind of asset, debt on your home, debt on your car, anything, I don't know, like a student loan is also debt.
Credit card debt,
right.
So the assets then, of course, could be these diggers. They could be single family homes. They could be these assets that he gets to claim depreciation on over an amount of time. So, okay, so given that, what was his formula? He had actually reached out to us right after we recorded last week's episode. So, and we had a great discussion about it.
Right. So we actually had it backwards when we explained it to you before.
Oops.
So I hope you didn't make any big sudden moves on because we were just kind of like, oh yeah, we should consider that. Which again is why we always give the disclaimer. We're not financial advisors. We're just helping you or letting people in behind the curtain as we figure out life together. And we hope that you enjoy the journey with us. So he had said that you should own up to 30% of your portfolio and have no more than 60 to 70% debt. Okay. So you take your assets and you leverage yourself. He says, be no more leveraged than 60%. So what you do is you make a balance sheet where you list out all of your assets, everything you own, include your cash accounts, your stock accounts, your 401k, your house, the current market value of your house, any college savings that you've got, the current market value of your car, anything that you have of value that you could sell for cash, art, even, I don't know, Clayton's face.
Right. It's right. Very valuable.
We don't have an insurance policy on his face. But
didn't
if
like
we
Jennifer
did,
Lopez have an insurance policy on her,
butt?
On her butt.
Yeah. I mean, but how could you really injure your butt so much that it couldn't be photographed?
Or that, yeah, they couldn't perform for you?
I don't know. I have given this thought and did not come up with any kind of, I would love to see the documentation on that. Anyway, so you have a total assets column and you add that up. Okay, then you go through and you list out your liabilities. What is your mortgage payment right now? What's the remaining balance on that mortgage payment? What's the remaining balance on your car payment? Any credit card payment you've got? Do you have a home equity line of credit? Any loans you've got, right? Then you total that up, you have a total liabilities column. You subtract your total assets from your total liabilities. That gives you what you're worth. That's your total net worth of your family, right? Now, if you want to figure out your debt to equity ratio, you divide your total, your total liabilities by your total assets, and you get a percentage of how much you're leveraged. Okay. Now, I told my dad about this, and I said we have 30% leverage, and he said, "No, I think you've got that wrong. You must have 60 or 70% leverage." And I said, "No, the reason being is that we purchased a lot of properties in Indianapolis for lower than market value, and we own them outright with cash. So we might have bought them for 40, but they're worth 60, which means our net value, our asset column is high because we own these free and clear. There's no debt on them and they're worth more than we paid for them."
Right.
So that's why he said, "Oh, well then you're in a good spot because you don't have as much liability to what you own."
But he did say that's too low. So his response to us is you don't want to be that low with your liabilities, meaning your leverage. So I hope folks at home are following us. The bottom line is his formula is we should have about 65 to 70% debt, leverage, loans out on properties.
Which means you're building your portfolio. Right. Now, that might, for some people, seem pretty aggressive, but when you run these numbers, you might think, oh, well, I have a lot of debt, say, on my house or my car or on a credit card. Once you pay that debt down, then you want to make a change. It takes a lot of stomach. And I think the point that I really wanted to make and this email that we got is that, yes, leverage takes some guts, but no guts, no glory, right? That is how wealthy people build portfolios, is they take what they own, they leverage it to build bigger portfolios, and they reap the benefits.
Right. This is not a Dave Ramsey approach to building wealth. You know, the Dave Ramsey approach is, well, I don't know under Dave Ramsey that you can even build wealth, right?
That's not his thing. He's
not concerned about building wealth. He just wants you to pay off debt.
Right. He wants you to be conservative in your living expenses, and I understand that. But we've talked about many times on this show, you cannot save yourself to wealth. There's almost no way to save enough dollars to be wealthy and just sort of have a bucket of cash and be like, okay, good, we're done. You need to have streams of income, not piles of income. And Dave Ramsey is kind of like, well, get yourself out of debt, lower your expenses, have plenty of money to live on while you get your paycheck every month, and then put some money in, he likes mutual funds, and then kind of hope for the best. You know, he doesn't really teach you what those are or teach you the best way to do them, or, you know, it's like he's very much of the time in the market, not timing the market.
Right. Like in episode 100, I did a monologue episode where I talked about piles or, you know, streams of cash versus piles of cash. And that's what we're going for here. So with 65 or even 60% leverage, what that bank or private lender or your home equity line of credit is doing for you, it's enabling you to acquire more properties to create streams of cash every month. So if you're bringing in $10,000 a month in streams of cash from your rental properties, but your leverage is only $2,000 a month, right? You're paying back a home equity line of credit, you're paying back a private lender, and you're only paying back about $2,000 a month. You're bringing in, I mean, you're grossing about $8,000 a month above your leverage point. That's how you build wealth. That's how you build wealth, right? Your tenants are covering the cost of the payback of that. Now, even if you account for 40%, if you take 40% out for vacancy, repairs, expenses, you're still way higher than that $2,000. You know, you're still bringing in like $4,000 net every month above your leverage point. So you want to think about those things and not be scared about debt, not be scared about the right kinds of debt.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the mechanics of how to do this, because maybe you've purchased an investment property and you own one like we did. We paid about $40,000. It's worth about $60,000, but it's in an LLC. So it's very hard to leverage that because a bank does not want to use that as collateral as long as that's in an LLC. They want to only loan to you as a person, not as a corporation, right?
Some do on a residential loan, but you could do it as a commercial loan where they actually demand that you have it in an LLC and will be happy to do like a blanket sort of portfolio loan of maybe five of your properties.
Right. So that's something to consider, because we recently did a portfolio loan and we didn't use the homes that we had as collateral. We did not take out a loan against them, which you could do, right? You could sort of take out a home equity line of credit on those properties inside the LLC. That might have been a little bit more complicated. And we didn't want to quick deed them over to ourselves in our name. That would have been a taxable event. And then, you know, use it as a personal asset and then get that money out. Instead, we just used it as part of our, like I said, our overall financial picture because we own the LLC, which means we own the properties. And then we were able to get a personal, a portfolio loan based on that as an asset. Does that make sense? So when they looked at our overall financial health, they knew that Clayton had a job. Natalie works for this company, mm-hmm. and gets bossed around by Clayton.
Right. Actually, folks, it's the opposite.
I wonder, you know, why that wasn't, there wasn't space for that on the application. They wanted to know what, you know, what was his income? What was our current amount of debt? What were these, you know, what are our 529s for our kids and our 401ks and our IRAs and those kind of things. They looked at all of that. And then they did look again at the properties owned inside of the LLC and took that into account as well. Hmm.
So yeah, that's one way to do it, which is to, you know, to do it as a sort of a commercial style loan.
Right.
The other way to do it is to simply look at your assets and see how you can leverage those assets. And that's, I think, really what my father-in-law was talking about, saying, okay, you've got a primary mortgage, you've got a primary house, and that's probably the place where you have the most, you have the biggest ability to leverage that primary asset. You live in this house. Now, pull your home equity out of that house and utilize it. It's sitting there doing nothing for you.
Right.
Don't go and then do a depreciate, or don't go and put a new kitchen in the house. Don't go and buy a boat unless you really need a boat. Turn that into more assets. So for, in the case of your dad, it could be buying a digger, right? It could be adding something to your company that's vital, that you can, that's an asset, but that is also a that you can depreciate and adds to your net worth column. So in the case of your father, for instance, he buys these $1 million diggers, these giant machines, earth moving machines. He can claim depreciation on those machines. And one thing he told me I thought was interesting is that they don't lose their value, because these are such fantastic machines that even over the life of, you know, after 5, 6, 7 years and I'm claiming depreciation on these machines, I could still basically sell it at the purchase price that I bought it at. I paid $1 million for it. I'm still able to claim depreciation. I'm still able to even sell it at almost its full value, which is really the case with real estate, that even if you bought it for 40, you know, I care a little bit that we have appreciation and a little bit of equity, but I mostly don't care. Mostly, I just want it to be a one for one and producing streams of cash for us.
Right. So I remember when my parents were separating, my dad needed to extend his line of credit for his business operations for specific reasons. And, it, you know, my mom had to sign off as well, but they were getting a divorce. It was very messy because he wanted her to sign, but they weren't getting along and she didn't want to sign. So, you know, this was his ability to build his business was based on their joint financial health as a team, which is why you need to think of it as you and your spouse are in a business together, because what you build together is who you are financially, and you're only as strong as you are as a couple. And that's how you build, based on like a really strong joint venture.
So as we continue to, you know, pull the curtain back on our current situation, that like what we did in episode last Wednesday, you know, you should go back and listen to that episode. It's really part one of this. Even though we had the formula backwards, we were still trying to figure out, okay, how can we use this home equity line of credit to accelerate our net worth and build up our streams of cash every month? Given that, when we looked, now that we understand the formula even better, how would we change that strategy? Is there a way we would change what we kind of laid out last week?
Well, no, because I think we were asking a different question, is where should we – maybe. You asked me a hard question. We had another a Twitter reply from Todd Krasminski. He tweets us a lot, and I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your name properly, Todd. But he says – you didn't factor in tax deduction due to mortgage interest, which is an awesome tax deduction. But with when we make an investment in properties, that's also a tax deduction.
Right. It's far greater. I mean, I think the mortgage interest deduction, I don't want to say this and sound like a punk, but I think it's not for wealth building people. Like, don't you think it's for more like middle class, lower middle class? It's a nice little incentive, but it really, I mean, it doesn't add up to much.
Well, yes, you deduct it, but you also deduct any investments you make as well.
Right. Do you think, I'm just going to throw this out there. Do you think that like Donald Trump gives a rat's behind about a mortgage interest deduction when compared to the purchase of the property?
I just want to go on record saying I don't know at all what Donald Trump gives a rat's ass about.
I know. But what I'm just saying is he's the guy that comes to mind when I think of real estate, you know, wealth building tycoon, golf courses, you know. He does not care about a mortgage interest deduction.
Aiming at this dispassionate, like, screw it, I'm bigger than that kind of attitude.
No, what I'm saying is when you compare apples to oranges, the apples is going to win out here.
I agree.
And that's what Tom Wheelwright says, right?
I agree.
Which is the mortgage interest deduction is peanuts.
It's kind of peanuts compared to what you can have if you make an investment and have a capital expenditure deduction. I understand that, yes. And it's usually not a reason to keep a mortgage.
He recommends
a book called Missed Fortune 101, which I will look into.
Okay, so we'll
thank
read
you
that.
For that.
Or Natalie will read that. But I guess the point is, yes, that the mortgage interest deduction is small potatoes compared to the tax offset that you get to have by buying rental real estate. That's a capital expenditure for your business, for your LLC. The mortgage interest deduction is a personal deduction, and I don't know. To me, it doesn't really amount to much at all. I mean, at the end of the year, what do we end up saving with that? It ends up being like, I don't know, not a lot, right?
I don't know.
It's actually very minimal. I mean, the fact that we don't know tells.
I mean, we've talked a lot about minimizing the amount of interest we pay to the bank.
Sure.
And so when I see that at the end of the year, like, big number in mortgage interest deduction, I always kind of want to hit myself in the head with a golf club.
Right.
You know, it's a lot. It doesn't feel good. And so I think that I would rather have no mortgage interest and no mortgage, right? And have that cash that we pay to ourselves. But yes, that increases our taxability. I'll have to think on that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a good point and it's a good discussion point. I just, when you compare the two of them, I don't think there's even a contest between, you know, owning rental real estate as a capital expense for your business, depreciating those assets compared to a mortgage interest deduction. It's really small, comparatively speaking. So any other point?
Incidentally, we've also had people on Twitter who ask about the books that we refer to, because we refer a lot to personal finance books. You should follow us on Goodreads. Clayton and I both post a lot about the books that we read on Goodreads. We never fail to mark or review a book. So I'm just Natalie Morris on Goodreads. Do you know what your username is?
I'm just Clayton Morris on Goodreads. Yeah. So Natalie Morris with no E. It's just N-A-T-A-L-I. Her parents forgot the E.
They didn't forget.
They didn't forget. They just purposely kept it off.
My mother thought it was interesting.
Someone the other day said to me, "Oh, if I have a little girl, I love that spelling of that name, Natalie. I love that name. I might do that." And I warned her against it because I said,
people call me Natalie.
Right? They're like, I spoke to your wife, Natalie, or they spell it wrong all the time. So when we get an email, I spoke to your wife, Natalie, and it has an E on it. I'm like, it just causes more strife. Just add the E and be done with it. It's pronounced the same way.
I guess.
Right.
But what? I don't think it follows the rules of English language with an IE. It's like an I at the end. I don't know.
We're really solving America's problems today.
Clearly.
So, all right. So to wrap this discussion point up. So for us, we need to really seriously look at our assets versus liabilities balance sheet. That's an action item. So everyone out there, get your balance sheet together for your family. And you should have probably already done this anyway as you're putting together your freedom, going through the freedom cheat sheet and seeing, you know, your overall liabilities, your overall monthly expenses. Look at what your assets are. Build that sheet out so you know where you stand. And then begin to think on how you can leverage those assets or add more leverage and be able to build higher streams of cash in your family.
Right. And so let's say we take our balance sheet and you know you're worth this number. Like say your net worth is $500,000, right? And you do it again at next quarter. I like to do it every quarter. You can do it every 6 months if you want, if you don't enjoy it like I do. I mean, why wouldn't
right.
you love
I love
doing
those
this?
Meetings. And I love when my wife grabs me. She's like, hey, do you want to know how much we're worth? And it's always, you know, I love it because it shows the growth of our family.
Right. It hasn't always gone up, but in the last couple of years, it has, especially as we rode the stock market early in our marriage. We were just making investments in ETFs and mutual funds. And so it wasn't always a beautiful picture, but lately it has been increasing because we've been putting most of our efforts into buying off-market real estate for a discount, right? So do this every quarter. And then what I do is I keep them in tabs. So I'll say, you know, balance sheet September 2006 and then balance sheet December 2006. So that's the end of two different quarters. And then I will compare those numbers and I will compare what's the difference. Is it worth more or less by how much? And then tell yourself a story. Why is that different? Did we purchase something or did we add more liabilities or what have you? You should be able to tell yourself the story of why you are or are not growing in order to set your sights on growth. And if you go to my website, nataliemorris.com, I have a blog post about doing this called How to Calculate Your Net Worth. And there's a giveaway so you can download an Excel spreadsheet as well.
And we'll have links to that in the show notes as well on our website at morrisinvest.com. And you click on the podcast tab, morrisinvest.com. So that wraps it up. We love all your emails. We love all your feedback. And I love getting the emails where it says, you know, this sparked a discussion in our family over dinner. And that's really what it's all about. So, you know, we're all learning this together and building net worth, building streams of cash for the purposes of creating passive income for our family. So that's the goal, right?
That's right. Thank you to everyone who reached out to us on Twitter or Facebook or wherever.
LinkedIn.
It's not hard to find us.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. If you are ready to book a call with our team, head over to our website at morrisinvest.com. Just click on the book a call tab. You can't miss it. And we will jump on the phone with you. 30 minutes. We'll talk about your goals, your strategies. If you're ready to acquire rental real estate, our team will help you. That's what we do all day long. And we love it. So thanks, everyone. Have a prosperous 2017, and we'll see you back here tomorrow with another episode of Investing in Real Estate.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.